big show, perhaps the biggest show. Well, not the biggest show of all time, but certainly the biggest show of week one is here for you today because week one is in the books. Andy Behrens joins me to recap the entire week one slate. But before that, I've got some things I need to get off my chest about Sunday Night Football. Jameson Williams' breakout performance. Let's talk about it. Are we worried about the Rams after a loss, but more importantly, some personnel issues on Sunday Night Football? And then Andy and I break down Texans Colts. What are the takes about Anthony Richardson? Cardinals Bills. Are we panicking about Marvin Harrison Jr.? I mean, there's so much coming up for you here on today's show. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Monday, September 9th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball because Sunday, week one, is officially in the books. Here is how this recap is going to go every single week. Andy Behrens and I are going to recap the entire Sunday slate with the rest of the show, but I'm going to start every single show off with a Sunday Night Football monologue talking about the things that I care and don't care about. One care for one team, one don't care for the other team. I usually will give the care to the winner and the don't care to the loser. Not going to follow that pattern every single week, but that is how we're going to start it off this week. We are recapping Lions 26, Rams 20, and man, what an absolute banger. First, let me just say this. Football rocks. That game was exhilarating, and I don't want to jinx us for tomorrow on Monday night, but my God, these island games are absolutely hitting right now. Thursday night, Friday night, Sunday night, absolute bangers, just total bangers of games. And in this one included, just let's start this off first. For the thing that we care about the fact that the Lions have multiple pitches. I think the Lions made it a little bit harder on themselves than it needed to be in this game. Detroit has matchup advantages all over that young Rams defense without Aaron Donald. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam Laporta, those guys weren't really involved. Felt like they were kind of playing with their food a little bit. But, man, overtime happens, and the Lions just lean into what the core of their identity is, was, and always has been, and they're bullies. Man, you know, they're moving people. Penei Sewell and the boys up front are moving people in the ground game. David Montgomery, who was kind of having a quiet fantasy night before this, he absolutely puts that to bed. He carries the ball five times, barreled through the LA Rams defense. Teach tape style runs really jogged my brain back to that Eckler's Edge segment from last year when Austin talked about that. He just completely barreled through that, just followed his pads, kept his shoulders square, the whole deal on the way to the game-winning touchdown. I mean, pure uncut Detroit Lions football. But prior to that extra quarter, I think we did see some new pitches from the Lions offense, and I really think we should care about that. Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, coming off of an injury, I kind of assumed, a lot of people assumed he might be limited in his return. Instead, I thought, at least it appeared to me, that Gibbs was sort of taking an authoritative step forward in that running back room. He had five targets in the first four quarters, 11 carries, including some work at the goal line. That is a critical note here when we're talking about Jahmyr Gibbs. Montgomery finished the night, of course. That's huge. But Gibbs continues to demonstrate that he is gaining ground and is a technically sound tempo runner in the same vein as the veteran in the backfield. I look for him to continue to ascend as the season wears on and he gets healthier. So I feel really great about Jahmyr Gibbs coming off this game. But the bigger development, we have to talk about this, and I'm burying the lead a little bit here. It's in the passing game with Jameson Williams. You guys know this if you listen to the show. I talked about Jameson Williams way too much this offseason, perhaps, in profiles, articles, podcasts, way too much depth on old Jameson Williams. But that's because he was a very fascinating and kind of divisive figure. And I think what we saw in week one was a lot of what we saw, sort of the signals, you know, reception perception showed us in those final five games. I talked about this a lot where the first part of the season, you know, he was like a disaster class last year, just not technically sound at all. Couldn't separate. Route running was poor. Then in those final five games, you saw a lot of the little signals of the prospect that he was, the player that he was at Alabama. And that was on full display tonight. Like I said at the top, Laporta, St. Brown, those guys combined for 58 yards in this game. Usually, St. Brown clears that all on his own. He went under that total three times all of last year. Lions weren't in any trouble because old Jamison Williams led the way, 121 yards and a score. The play he had over Tre'Davious White was a complete heater. I mean, he obliterated Tre'Davious White in coverage. I had tweeted out a really good angle of it. If you haven't seen that, you can check my feed. But that wasn't the only way that Williams made his presence known. He caught three passes working across the formation as a layup target, produced extra yards after the catch. That's the type of dirty work, target earning skills that he showed in college in addition to world-class speed. I love the him in the post-game interview for NBC talking about, you know, he was like literally smiling and dancing and saying that the faith of his coach and quarterback meant a lot because he's been through a lot. I thought that was a cool note, and he was all smiles, a guy that was totally into the whole process. That conviction is what the Lions have been talking about all offseason, and it was all reaffirmed in the most critical way on Sunday night. Are we going to get this version of Jamison Williams the rest of the season? Of course, a full 17 games into the playoffs. I have no idea. I think I'm not ready to totally assume that yet. What I will say is that obviously a full-scale Williams breakout like we saw in this game, if that holds for the rest of the season, we're talking about this is going to change the complexion of distribution of work in the Lions offense. Like I said, I'm not totally there yet. Got to see more. Got to see this. Stack these performances. Stack these weeks over the course of four games, five games, etc. But even just a leap forward, him consistently being the player he was in the final five games that I charted at the end of last year, obviously including the playoffs as well. Even just that player, that leap forward, those skills that he showed in week one, that brings a new and dangerous wrinkle to an already elite offensive unit. Now let's talk about the thing I don't care about. And I really don't want to care about the Rams' red flags. I'll be honest with you, dear listener, that in the late portion of the first half, I was ready to write off the 2024 Rams. They're cooked. You know, I've been saying for weeks now, if you listen to Football 301, the podcast that I do with Nate Tice and Charles McDonald, I've been saying for weeks now, especially on our NFC Wins pod, that I'm worried about the Rams. I've been calling them the most fragile ecosystem, certainly in the NFC, and the cracks were already springing, you know, on the offensive line, in training camp, Puka Nacua dealing with injuries, and then those cracks were bursting open pretty much in this game. That the fragility of the Rams was threatening to end what should be a pretty promising season before we even really got going. And I mean, I don't know what to say other than Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp happened. I mean, Stafford should simply not have been able to function behind that offensive line. 61, the left tackle out there. I'm blanking on the name now. 61, the left tackle was, I mean, it was a nightmare back there. It was brutal for Stafford, but he consistently evaded pressure. He consistently worked to reset platform, throwing off platform, showing that mastery of arm angles that he has. Look, fantasy managers will never understand how impressive that Stafford outing was if they just look at the numbers, you know, look at the box score, look at the fantasy points. He's 6.5 yards per attempt, one touchdown, 85.2 pass rating. Who cares? It doesn't even come close to doing justice for that performance. It was an unbelievable game by Stafford. And of course, Cooper Kupp, 21 targets, 110 yards and a score. With Puka Nacua sidelined, it was the Stafford Kupp tunnel vision. It was straight out of the 2022 Rams nightmare playbook. But I will say this, even with all these warning flags, I still don't think this offense is going to get that bad. I don't think it'll ever, unless Stafford obviously is hurt, things continue to fall apart. I don't think it's ever going to get 2022 Rams bad. The run game is too well designed. Kyren Williams gives his team an identity. Kyren Williams taking an authoritative step in this backfield. Blake Corum, who, okay, Kyren Williams is still the RB1 slash punt returner. I don't even know. Who cares? Kyren Williams is the man in this backfield. I still think that grounding principle of this team is going to make it so this doesn't totally and completely fall apart. And with that in mind, with what we know from tonight, what we know from 2022, is that Kupp still has wide receiver one overall in his range of outcomes in a true nightmare scenario. And I don't really know that this is going to be that kind of nightmare. But I will say, again, What I don't care about is the red flags. Maybe I'm just looking through rose-colored glasses, and when you look through rose-colored glasses, you ignore red flags. But I'm at this point right now here at 12:30 a.m. Eastern on Monday, wanting to ignore the red flags that the Rams are giving me, and I want to chase the ceiling of this Cup Stafford connection, because Sunday Night Football made it abundantly clear that we are in that timeline. All right, with that in mind, with that all said, let's go to the rest of the show and the great Andy Behrens as we recap the rest of Week 1's Sunday slate. Joining me now, the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, a man rocking a hoodie. Is that a hoodie? Is it a hooded t-shirt? Either way, Week 1 has happened. Andy Behrens is in a hoodie or a hoodie adjacent. It is certainly fall, everybody, and it's a great day to talk ball with Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
What a day. What a day we had. A roller coaster ride for Bears fans like myself that ended reasonably well, I think. We'll say it sure. Ended well. I mean, it ended with a win. That's good. Odd day of some really bad football played, some occasional really thrilling football played, but let's talk about it.
Absolutely. We have a lot to get to today. I still feel like information is rattling around in my brain. My brain's about to leak out of my ears, you know, so we're going to try to process all of this together. And to do that, we do have a bit of a new format that we're going to do on these Sunday recaps. Andy and I, from it'll be a little bit different from previous years. We're going to break the games into three categories, sort of lean into, you know, my care, don't care recap column a little bit here. We're going to talk about the games we care the most about, games we sort of care about, and then games that could have been an email. And if, you know, you work in office culture at all, you get that. Like, this meeting could have been an email. this game certainly could have been an email. We have some ones that absolutely fit into that category this week, and then we'll end every show giving out some weekly awards when they apply. But Andy, let's waste no more time. Let's start with the top game that I think we should care about, which is Texans 29, Colts 27. I had this one up on the main TV. I was very excited to watch it. And I think it delivered on that promise.
Absolutely delivered. A little bit of a roller coaster game for Anthony Richardson, right? Hit the long early touchdown to Pierce, missed an easy TD to A.D. Mitchell. But man, like that guy's still going to finish, I don't know, top three, top five at the position in fantasy scoring this week, in a week in which it didn't always look great. Certainly didn't play a clean game. What else? Joe Mixon's so good. And I think underappreciated. He had a terrific game. Obviously, Steph Diggs was basically perfect. I think he caught all of his targets, a couple of touchdowns. Our guy, Nico Collins, tremendous, like tremendous deep, tremendous late catch. Made a late catch in this one that I still don't know how it happened. It looked like a glitch. He was just absolutely terrific, man. The Texans are gonna be a big problem.
Yeah, let's stick with the Texans here, because the way I sort of felt about them coming out of this game is that the new is good, the old is even better. Like, the things that were good about them last year, CJ Stroud and Nico Collins, and, you know, Tank Dell didn't have some explosive game here, but he drew seven targets, he had a bunch of air yards, and just, like, honestly having him out there on the football field is a good thing. But especially the Stroud to Collins connection is as electric as ever. I thought Stroud, you know, missed a few throws, some decisions here and there, but for the most part was poised, accurate, showed that pocket presence that makes him a top 10 quarterback, I think, right now. And with Nico Collins, just clearly the alpha of this receiver room, over 50% of the air yards. He leads the team in targets. He does, as you said, he won deep, like the flashy contested downfield pass where you're making your quarterback right. He also wins in that late out route to pretty much seal the game. You know, it's a technically sound play. He has great hands. Like, he, again, it should not be a top like a hot take to say that he is a top 10 real life NFL receiver. If I spent a third round pick on Nico Collins, which I did, I'd feel great about it coming out of this game. This is exactly what you want to see. On the other side too, it's just those, the new part of the Texans here, the Joe Mixon and Stephon Diggs effect. Andy, watching that game, I felt like those two guys fit into the exact roles that Houston probably imagined, which is for Diggs. He has like no air yards in this game, very short average depth of target, but he's getting open on these quick routes. That's stuff you can throw out because he scored two short touchdowns. So yeah, he's not going to have a bunch of air yards. No kidding. That's going to go hand in hand. But him being able to separate quickly on those plays in the red zone, inside the 10-yard line on third and fourth down, that's exactly how I pictured him being used. And Mixon, 30 carries, over 100 yards, a long run of like 13 yards, I believe, and still he averaged over 5 yards per carry. That shows you exactly what type of rushing he was doing in this game.
He, to me, like I was a huge fan of young Joe Mixon when maybe not a lot of eyes were on him because the Bengals weren't very good. They were not a particularly entertaining watch. But man, this looked like, you know, first 3 years of mm-hmm. Joe Mixon. He's one of those guys who can handle, I think it was 33 touches today, can handle a massive workload and is still really strong at the end, kind of a throwback runner. I just thought he was great. And he's like, Devin Singletary was fine there last year and they loved him. Joe Mixon, a better player, a better back. And the difference between those two was I thought, evident. Man, this team is loaded. This team is really, really scary.
I know they're going to be fun all year. Again, if I had spent a draft pick on basically any one of these Texans players, I'd feel really good coming out of this game. Yeah, Mixon, I don't want to say he was a surprise to me, but just that type of authoritative entrance into the 2024 season. I think he's going to end up, if this type of usage holds, I think he's going to end up outproducing a lot of backs, like younger, flashier backs that went ahead of him. And that's just a guy who's still certainly not... I mean, he's still pretty much, I mean, he looked like he was in the prime of his career to me today. It sounds like you agree too. A guy who's still in the prime of his career, playing on a good offense, he's going to touch the ball 30 plus times, or he has that in his range of outcomes. Yeah, it's probably going to be a running back one in fantasy football. To spin it back to the Colts before we move on, anything you wanted to see from Anthony Richardson for like confirmation bias purposes, you basically got it today.
Yep. Yep.
Averages over 11 yards per attempt, completes under 50%. Like you said, left plays on the field is the way I would describe it. Whether it's inaccuracy or just not seeing things clearly, he just left plays on the field. But he still has 26 fantasy points. So, I mean, this is my thing, Andy, is I don't want us to rush to judgment on who Anthony Richardson is because this is a long-term process here that we're playing out. But in the meantime, he's going to get you fantasy points if that's all you care about.
Yeah, it was a game that was very much like his preseason, right? Where whatever story you'd told yourself about Anthony Richardson, you had absolute confirmation of it. The thing, and listen, this was not obviously Bears Titans was my primary game, but I felt like almost every time I checked in on this game, someone was falling. It wasn't quite as bad as Packers Eagles in Brazil, but there was a turf issue in Indianapolis. And I think we're lucky that, all the key players came out of this thing, uninjured. Cause that was wild. People were on skates. Stroud fell a couple times, just like on his dropbacks. Mitchell fell on a break, right? Like it's just that was a rough look.
Yeah, the interception, Kylan Granson kind of stumbled a little bit in his route, and then Houston defender just picks it off there from Anthony Richardson. I would say the one thing that I'm like adjusting after this game is Alec Pierce was sort of discussed as if he was just a worthless NFL player, which I didn't have like a strong take on Alec Pierce coming into the season, but he did have a good prospect I don't want to say good prospect profile and reception perception, but showed that he could have some use as a deep threat and a very limited route tree, but very much in the sacrificial X receiver bucket of players. But you have a guy in Anthony Richardson who will let those throws rip. I mean, we're not bearing the lead because the Texans won the game and they have a lot of great players, but we're bearing the lead on the fact that Anthony Richardson probably had like a one of one throw on the touchdown to Alec Pierce. That's a pass that, I don't know how many other quarterbacks in the NFL can make that throw. On the flip side, I don't know how many high level starting quarterbacks are going to miss some of the things that Richardson did in this game. That's just who he is. But the Pierce thing, I do think is going to force me kind of to go back to the table with some of my rankings for some of these other receivers, because if he's going to be involved, I do think that dampens the ceiling a little bit for a guy like Michael Pittman and maybe alters the breakout sort of potential of a guy like Adonai Mitchell, especially because Josh Downs is not yet involved here.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it's going to look like when Josh Downs is involved, and I expect that'll hit Mitchell immediately. Not really a lot of targets for anyone in this game. Pittman saw eight, didn't do that much with him. And then, you know, Pierce becomes an immediate problem for me because I write the pickups column, right? Like, what do you do? Three targets, but 125 yards at a touchdown. I have to mention it, right? People are going to be adding him. But, you know, the use, I mean, it's probably going to be three, four targets a week. It's not going to be a lot more than that. But the fact that Richardson can actually reach him anywhere on the field matters. It matters a lot. The fact that he's willing to pull the trigger on those throws matters a lot. I can't, you know, it's too late to like go draft a bunch of best ball teams in all likelihood, but he's such a perfect player for that sort of format where I don't have to guess on where and when Alec Pierce goes off. But yeah, I imagine there'll be two more of these games for Alec Pierce rest of season.
Yeah. And Mitchell was probably the guy that if I was just watching the broadcast and I did watch most of this game, if I would say that one person was the biggest victim of things left on the field or misses by Anthony Richardson, it would be Adonai Mitchell. So he'll have these games too. I think that's the thing, is that all these Colts receivers are going to have their moments, but it might be difficult to pinpoint when they come. Okay, let's move on to the next game here that we care about, which is Cardinals 28, Bills 34. The Bills, you know, were kind of on the ropes a little bit in the first half and then just kind of became the Bills. Andy, and I saw you post about this, and I kind of want to start with the Bills side of this before moving to the frisky Arizona Cardinals. I saw you say, like, today was a good reminder that Josh Allen can indeed be the QB1 without having a top 40 fantasy wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there was going to be a clear right answer in this receiving core, and that guy was going to emerge in the first few weeks of the season. I feel like I talked about it all week, and then they threw the ball 23 times, 23 pass attempts. No one saw more than five targets. 10 different players were targeted on those 23 attempts. They threw the ball five times in the first half to five different players. And it didn't matter. Josh Allen's going to finish as the QB1, right? because he takes the goal line work, because he's a brilliant runner who runs through contact at the goal line like a wild man, and he still managed a couple of touchdown passes because, again, he's Josh Allen. I don't, like, 23 passes, if that's actually a plan, like if they actually settle in as a team that is throwing the ball, you know, fewer than 30 times a game, which I wouldn't think you would do with Josh Allen, but that would become problematic over time. But, it, you know, this was definitely a reminder that there is an actual real path for Josh Allen to be the QB1 without any of his receivers being, you know, a must start player. Like I just thought that we would at the end of either this week, next week, we'd be looking at either Dalton Kincaid or Khalil Shakir as somebody who was like, oh yeah, I got to park him in my lineup the rest of the year. I'm never taking that guy out. That guy's a pet player for Josh Allen. And it, you know, Shakir was good. Kincaid was really quiet. Dawson Knox had, you know, Dawson Knox would have been the tight end to roster in this one. Wild though. 23 passes to 10 different guys is really something.
Yeah, it was something. It was definitely a reminder, because this is a game, not that they did not control this game, right? They were trailing for large sections.
Arizona was so good early. Yeah. They were so good early.
And, you know, defensively, that's the area of weakness for this team. And I thought there were moments again in the first couple of quarters where the defense held this offense at bay. It was just a reminder, like you said, you know, kind of the harken back to the conversation I had with Nate Tice last week on the Fantasy Film Room when he talked about the Bills run game. This sort of moved into being the core identity of their operation last year. And to see in a game where, like I said, they were not controlling, this was negative game script. Josh Allen throws 23 passes to James Cook. He didn't have some explosive fantasy game, but he carried the ball 19 times for 71 yards and still chipped in three catches, 10.7 yards per reception. He's someone I'd feel pretty good about if I drafted him, even though he didn't have some crazy big performance. But yeah, I just want to kind of circle back on the receivers as well. I don't really know if I want to have a long Dalton Kincaid conversation here, Andy, because I can guarantee you he will be one of the most submitted players when we do the People's Panic Meter with Dalton on tomorrow's episode. So again, we'll details on that at the end of the episode as to how to submit. But for the wide receivers, I got kind of what I expected here, which is Curtis Samuel ran a route on 30% of the dropbacks, according to Dwayne McFarland from Fantasy Life. You know, he was getting broken back in after a turf toe injury. It's no surprise he's starting a little slower. Matt Collins played on 67%, ran around 67% of the dropbacks. Not surprising. I told you that was going to happen. Hopefully it didn't bother you when Matt Collins scored that touchdown. The one surprise was that Keon Coleman ran around on 90% of the dropbacks and had a 22% target share. That was pretty encouraging to see for Keon Coleman.
Yeah, no, I think you can feel relatively good. If he was a, you know, if you drafted him late as a sleeper, you can tell yourself a little story. If you drafted Shakir again late as a sleeper, you can tell yourself a story. It's funny. We talked about Matt Collins a couple times on Fantasy Football Live on Sunday morning, and it was kind of jokey, but also kind of not, you know, like coaches love that guy. He's a total pro. He was going to factor into this somehow. And he's, you know, he's going to play just enough to muck things up a little bit in this receiving core, and you're never going to be able to pull the trigger on actually starting him. So yeah, it's a problem. But man, Josh Allen, apparently, again, one of the absolute right answers in fantasy football.
Yeah, Matt Collins scoring a touchdown in week one, probably the dumbest thing I've ever been like mass tweeted about. That was pretty funny, but the sacrificial X receiver movement is alive and well. I can't believe that the social team, shout out to the social team, pulled a quote graphic on me saying that Matt Collins was going to play more. And if I was a pettier person, Andy, I would go back to those Instagram comments, you know, because to be fair, the headshot that I have, you and I need to take new headshots. Bro. I don't know when yours is from, but mine is from 2018. And I look like somebody that should be like given a swirly. So I don't blame the Instagram comments for you know, cyberbullying me, but if I was a pettier person, I would go back and remind some of those people that I know ball and they don't. Anyways, stupidest thing I've ever said on the podcast about the Matt Collins thing. But anyways, let's talk about the Arizona Cardinals, who you know, some stupid stuff happened for the Arizona Cardinals here. Like Marvin Harrison, one catch, 4 yards in his rookie debut. Andy, am I wrong to not be too concerned about this Marvin Harrison Jr. thing, or how do you feel about it?
Marvin Harrison Jr. is another guy who is obviously going to show up in the Panic Meter podcast, I would imagine. He had a drop and then they went right back to him, and you took that as a good sign. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Gannon after the game was saying repeatedly in various ways that it was really coverage that dictated the target situation with Harrison. But man, if you're a Cardinals fan, if you're somebody who's invested in Harrison at all in fantasy, the lingering image of this game is him strolling downfield in a broken coverage situation on the final drive, just waving his arm, looking for Kyler, and Kyler absolutely not looking for him whatsoever. He had about 20 yards of separation. Nobody running deep with him. Just a brutal game. And that would have covered up the entire disappointing affair. And then the game ends basically on a jump ball to Greg Dortch, which, you know, there's a lot of great ways that you can use Greg Dortch, and that's just not one of them, right? Two guys on Dortch, expecting him to come down with that ball was a bit much. It was like two different games for Kyler Murray. Again, I thought they came out great. I thought they looked really good. I thought they looked like a team that was absolutely able to compete with the Bills and might get a win. And then it just all went away. And, you know, having actually making use of somebody like Marvin Harrison would have been a great answer. Having some easy answers for Marvin Harrison would be a big deal. Those can be a variety of things. Those can be wide receiver screens. Those can be, you know, let's get it to him as a rusher. Let's allow Marvin Harrison to feel the ball in his hands. That would have helped. And they didn't do it. I would like to see it going forward.
Yeah. I'm no Dortch bro. I know that there are plenty of Greg Dortch bros in the fantasy football Twitter streets. A little too much Greg Dortch in this game. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, the fade to Greg Dortch to end the game. We don't need that. But overall, like I said, this is an offense that played well on the road against a defense that is just better than them, probably, against a really good defensive coach that I think adjusted well in the second half. So overall, I feel fine about the Cardinals. I think there will be better days ahead, but I do understand why people are panicked, and I'm going to try to watch that game back before the People's Panic Meter segment, where we will discuss that more in depth.
I will say another thing about Kyler that you can take away as a positive if you've bought into him in fantasy, and I have. He looked great on the ground. Five carries, 57 yards, looked like vintage Kyler to me. So that you know, five carries, you might like to see a little bit more, but he looked really lively. He's going to have some 80-yard rushing performances.
All right, buddy. Next game up, Titans 17, Bears 24. Take it away.
Man, first of all, Will Levis was bad. And I
Will Levis was Will Levis is what I would say.
Yeah.
He did the surrender. Did you see him, not to cut you off, but he did the surrender Cobra on the field on his knees while the play was still happening. Not great.
I mean, people I'm sure know the password talking about, like him basically while taking a sack, trying to underhand the ball to a receiver who was getting closed on by a defender. I mean, just a brutal decision, something that I would put up there with like the worst and most hilarious decisions that like Eli Manning ever made, you know, just an absolute clown show in the second half from Levis. And I thought he looked fine in the first half. He was kind of a proactive runner, good and bad because he was taking some big hits. But man, he lost that game. There was also maybe he was getting heated up a little bit by the Bears pass rush, but he missed a deep shot to Calvin Ridley. Ridley looked really good to me. So just a really, really rough game from Levis. Obviously one that Tennessee did not have to lose. The Bears weren't great. They got, you know, they got basically time of possession to death in the first half. So it was really hard to draw any conclusions about anybody. I thought Caleb was fine. He should have thrown it. There should have been a touchdown pass to Keenan Allen. It was like a rare Keenan Allen drop, that I think Keenan would say that he should catch 100 out of 100 times. It was a pretty well thrown ball. I think the most worrisome things for me with Caleb, number one, the interior of the Bears line got caved in a few times and he had no shot. And number two, he's a little casual with like the sidearm three quarters delivery. He's not a huge guy, and that got batted. Like those passes got batted a lot. I don't know how many passes officially got batted, but there were several in situations where it probably didn't need to happen. And it's not like a pass rusher was like in his face or anything like that. So that's probably an adjustment that has to get made, because it was just a small miracle that he didn't get picked a couple times, because he had a couple balls just like pop straight in the air. And obviously Tennessee could have come down with those. Bit of a miracle win for the Bears, but we'll take it. Everybody's feeling pretty good. What else? DJ Moore was great. I don't think it's not going to pop in the box score necessarily, but DeAndre Swift was clearly the featured back for the Bears, and that had been an open question coming into this one. So I really thought, based on preseason usage, we might see a little bit more Khalil Herbert, but really not at all. DeAndre was not only like the guy who was usually on the field, but they also used him to kind of run out the game a little bit late.
Yeah, that was a really good summary from what I saw from this game as well. To go with the Bears thing, I think this was a really good reminder that Caleb Williams is a really great prospect. He is still a rookie quarterback, man.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of the stuff that you just said and a lot of the things that I felt when I was watching him. And even I think the announcers on the game sort of said this a couple of times too. Is just, that's some stuff you can get away with in college. You can't get away with it in the NFL. And like, you're going to learn that stuff. Some of the arm angles things, as you mentioned, sometimes, you know, when he's making plays off script that he doesn't have to be. Next Gen Stats pointed out that Williams, when he held the ball for longer than 2.5 seconds, he went 3 of 13 for 34 yards. Yeah. That's the type of stuff that, yeah, you get away with that in college. You don't get away with it in the NFL. And like, hopefully that's something he can learn over time, but it's something to just keep in the back of your mind that as long as he is this guy, as long as he's developing and growing, these guys on offense are not going to hit this crazy ceiling. I do think that the Titans defense played well in this game. And I'm with you that overall the Titans, like I was ready to tweet out like Titans eye emoji in the first half, you know, because I thought that they were playing frisky football. You know, Will Levis was moving the thing. Tony Pollard looked great, like the clear running back one in this backfield. I'm with you that Calvin Ridley looked like a rejuvenated player as well. Chig Okonkwo coming back from the netherworld to score, you know, a touchdown here. And then in the second half, it's just Will Levis is Will Levis. Again, from Next Gen Stats here, he was under pressure on 47.4% of his dropbacks. That was an issue last year. It was an issue here. And as long as that happens, I don't think we're going to get steady quarterback play out of Will Levis.
Yeah, he was really brutal. And that was obviously not just a winnable game, but like, I don't know what the... I don't know what the what their expected outcome was at various points in that game, but it's crazy the Bears came away with that win, and they don't do it without Will Levis throwing probably the worst pick six we're going to see maybe all year. Just an unbelievable decision. I should have also mentioned, like, the other thing that Caleb just can't do and can't, you know, that it worked a couple times in the preseason, but like he took a sack that went for a 19 yard loss.
Yes.
Where like he did the thing where like he turns his back to the line of scrimmage, which you better be Cam Newton. You better be Mike Vick if you're like routinely turning your back to the line of scrimmage and running sideways. Right. He did that, took a huge loss. That was a real drive killer and a momentum killer. So they can't, like, things like that just have to end.
Final note on this game, Keenan Allen dealing with a little bit of a heel injury, saw a team high 11 targets in this one. If he misses any time, or, you know, this just persists, I don't think it was certainly, like, I'm with you. That was very on par. That Keenan Allen drop was very much on par with the one he had with the Chargers last year against the Packers in the end zone, that just, like, yeah, he should catch that 100 times out of 100, and he just didn't there. That was very much like this one today. Roma Dunze played basically as much as DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. So if Keenan Allen has to miss any time, Rome would obviously be the direct pickup. Final game that we care about here, Andy Behrens, that we really care about. Steelers 18, Falcons 10. Put the Steelers aside for a second. We'll get to your boy Justin Fields and the Steelers here in just a second. Man, I want to come on this show, Andy, and be like, hey, it's 1 week. Really good defense. Remember, this is new, okay? New head coach, new quarterback, yeah, new play caller. A lot of new things coming together here. That's what I want to say. I want to feel that way about the Atlanta Falcons. And yet, Andy Behrens, I am coming away from week one Atlanta Falcons football about as discouraged as I possibly could have been. As I possibly could be. Can you talk me down on this one at all?
I don't know if I can talk you down on it exactly. I mean, this comes down to how quickly Kirk Cousins can be, like, whatever you think the ceiling is for Kirk Cousins this season, how quickly do we get there? Because he really looked like a guy on a new team coming off a significant injury and a long layoff who we hadn't seen in the preseason, right? Like, all of it. He was just a beat slow on a lot of stuff. And you know, again, you credit the Steelers, and the Steelers have a way of winning these games. I get it. But it's gotta get, like, the games keep coming, and it's gotta get better quickly. And, this is one of the worries when a lot of stuff is new, is that it can actually take a little bit of time. And Cousins is obviously not just new, but, you know, was spending his entire offseason rehabbing too. So, it's a huge concern. I mean, when the quarterback position is a big concern, the whole offense is. If I'm looking at one thing as, this wouldn't really be as a Falcons fan, but certainly as a fantasy manager, any worries that there would be like a Bijan Robinson, Tyler Algier, 50-50 or 55-45 thing, that's out the window. That was entirely Bijan's show. In a game that where he was actually relatively quiet, he still finishes with over 100 scrimmage yards. So he was great. Kyle Pitts got in the end zone, and nothing else looked good.
Yeah, I just think it looked so bad for Kirk. And that's where my biggest concern is that he, and I know I said this at least once on this show that, and I gave a shout out to Greg Rosenthal and Ollie Conley for doing a really good, episode on this on NFL Daily, where they just sort of posed the question of what if the bad Kirk Cousins showed up? Cause I think we forget that Kirk Cousins' season long stats always look like about the same guy, and the journey to get there is never very smooth. And maybe that's like the answer to our problem here, Andy, is this, like, right now we're in the bad Kirk Cousins zone, but in a couple of weeks he'll settle in and then he'll have a great 4-game stretch. That would not be shocking if Kirk did that. Now, I think it would be a bit of a sober reminder that we probably drafted all these Falcons players at their peak, and like what's going to happen during the good Kirk stretch. That is maybe a sobering reminder of that. But the things that just had me really concerned was how uncomfortable he looked, like you said, beat slow, making bad decisions, forcing things. And the fact that this offense, again, according to Next Gen Stats, used pistol the majority of their offensive plays, 55%, never used play action, never took a single snap under center, or took just one snap under center in this game. part of the selling point of this is, oh, Kirk has played in this offense. Kirk has played in this offense. That's not really the offense that Kirk has played in the vast majority of his career. That's what they did with the Rams last year, where this coaching staff comes from. But yeah. Now if you're telling me there's another adjustment process, and maybe this is all to adjust to Kirk and post Achilles and all that, maybe. I, bottom line, Andy, I just would have loved for you not like to, there not to be 1,000 Michael Penix tweets on Sunday. That would have been a better outcome than what we got.
Yeah, Ray McLeod leading the team in targets was not that was just not on the card for me. That's not really something that I saw coming. Three targets for Drake London, not great. Kyle Pitts, three targets, not great. And again, Kirk, yeah, I don't like. Again, I want to credit Pittsburgh too. Pittsburgh, a good team. The defense is playing. They're well paid. They have some stars. But it just looked a little bit of slow processing and a little bit of, you know, more than rust. I guess the concern is that it's more than rust, right? That's what we're saying, that it's, you know, combination of injury and time off and age, and man, can he actually get back to being the Kirk Cousins that we saw when he got hurt? Because that guy was going to throw for like 4,800 yards, 5,000 yards. So I'd still be hopeful, and I do still like the skill talent here, but man, some rough decisions and some really slow decisions.
Yeah, they play the Eagles next week, and they're going to need to score some points against the Eagles if they want to win that game. 10 is not going to cut it. 10 didn't cut it in this because the Steelers scored 18. Andy, Steelers were about what I expected in this one. George Pickens dominated the target tree. He had 75% of the team air yards. I really actually love the way he was used. He was exclusively used on outside the numbers targets. That was great to see. Like, his next gen route chart looks exactly what you want to see George Pickens doing. So I thought that was encouraging. It also maps really well with Justin Fields, who was Justin Fields in this one. That was about what I expected. It was rocky. There were some questionable moments in the pocket, but when he found Pickens, he could get the ball down the field to him. They used a ton of play action in this one. It was, like I said, about what I expected. And it was sort of weird, this quarterback situation this week. Russell Wilson literally was lurking around in the game in full pads, which
in pads
just kind of cracked me up. But not a surprising development. So I expect Fields to probably keep. I would guess that Fields keeps the job after this. They get a win and play in the identity that I imagine that they want to play all year.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that. I don't know that Fields played well enough to, you know, force anyone's hand and take the job. He was fine. Obviously led, you know, six scoring drives, all of which resulted in field goals. But the box score isn't bad for him, right? Only two sacks for Justin Fields is a positive. Even though he only attempted 23 passes, like, only two sacks for Justin Fields is a positive. Not giving the ball away for Justin Fields is a positive. And man, you are so right about the what they asked George Pickens to do, which is just perfect for the player that he currently is and has been to this point in his career. And you tweeted out the route chart from him. That is ideal usage, I think, for George Pickens. It suits both his game and I think Russell Wilson's game, but certainly certainly suits Justin Fields' game. Like, that is, you know, if we're just asking Justin Fields to do that, it's wheelhouse stuff for him. So it was good. I don't know if this is Justin Fields' job moving forward. He's the more interesting answer fantasy wise. Justin Fields is the guy who can definitely any game run for 80 yards. So that gives him a very high fantasy floor, especially if he's not turning the ball over. I'm not going to say that he was like the most fun version of Justin Fields that we've seen, but it was good enough.
Yeah, it was good enough. I just think what he gives him in the run game maybe is enough for them to pause and thinking about going back to Russell Wilson, who they clearly have some loyalty to. That is for damn sure. Okay.
Only offensive captain on the team, Russell Wilson.
Indeed. Only offensive captain. Very fascinating. Okay. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to the games we sort of care about right after this. All right, Andy, we are back. Let's talk through Jaguars 17, Dolphins 20. The Dolphins get this win Even though it didn't look like for a long time they were going to get this win after a very eventful day for two of their players who were put in handcuffs this morning, in Tyreek Hill and Calais Campbell. You know, think what you want about Tyreek Hill and all that. I mean, all that he's done in his life. Calais Campbell, I mean, what are we doing here? Calais Campbell's one of the nicest NFL players on earth. He's like one of the sweetest players in the league. So, I mean, what the hell is going on there? But on the field, the Dolphins weren't able to get out of this thing pretty unscathed. And I think from a fantasy perspective, Andy, the fact that the target tree was basically Hill, Waddle, and Achan, and that's it, that has to make you feel pretty good.
Yeah, I think if you've got Achan, you're feeling really, really good. Because the backfield was actually pretty muddled, right? There was a surprising amount of Jeff Wilson. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised by how much Jeff Wilson there was, but it was it was Mostert and it was Achan and it was Wilson. But man, seven grabs for Achan in a pile of receiving yards. It was really, really good to see. And, you know, this is a well-coached team. McDaniel's a smart guy, and the ball is going to the playmakers, and that was really good to see. You know, Tua was good enough. Tyreek Hill and Waddle coming up with a touchdown celebration that plays off the crazy events pregame. Absolutely wild. I should have thought of it. I should have known that was going to happen. But yeah. Kudos to them. Phenomenal work. Probably a game that Miami did not. I mean, I don't think I felt at any point like Miami deserved this game. It just felt like so many of the Jaguars' losses of the past, right? Where like a little bit of adversity hits and it's a hinge point in the game and it all swings in the opponent's direction.
I would be so annoyed by that if I was Jacksonville, because I thought three things felt very different about, well, I guess if you want to throw the defense too, which I thought played the Dolphins really well in the first half. Like defensively, I thought they played well in the first half. They played physical. They played tough, exactly how you kind of want to play this Dolphins unit. And that definitely felt like Ryan Nielsen's effect on this team in that first half. On offense, I thought there were three things that were markedly different from last year. Number one, the run game was actually explosive. You know, whether it was effective down to down, we'll have to kind of dig into the stats and see that. But, you know, Tank Bigsby, kind of popped up here. Travis Etienne, I thought, moved the ball well. You know, Trevor Lawrence, they got him under center, and he actually looked pretty confident pushing the ball downfield. That was different. That, I think, is a nice sort of way to push his career along. And then the third thing was Brian Thomas Jr., man. Brian Thomas was... This was a very encouraging debut for him, not just because he scored a touchdown, which that touchdown that he scored in the back of the end zone, toe tapping. How many times, Andy, last year did that go out of bounds by a toe or was bobbled a little bit? You know what
I'm
saying?
That was every play that was like double caught by a Jags receiver where they got 1 foot inbounds or they dropped it. Like that was absolutely every play that they managed to botch last year. And he hauled it in and I was like, oh man, Brian Thomas is on his way to a 90 yard day. And then that was it. That's like the last we heard of Brian Thomas.
He was shadowed by Jalen Ramsey in this game, which, again, I think is super encouraging for Brian Thomas that somebody thought that much about Brian Thomas, and we got to do that. Yeah. So I do think he could end up being one of the right answers at wide receiver, but frustrating overall for Jacksonville that they let this one slip, and makes me wonder if this ecosystem is still going to be kind of mid and not one where a lot of fruitful fantasy will be grown.
I think it's also worth mentioning that Tank Bigsby was actually out carrying and out producing Etienne before the fumble, right? Wasn't just like Etienne had this catastrophic moment in the game. That was already a thing. That was already happening.
Next game up here, Vikings 28, Giants 6. You could argue that this should be this game should have been an email. I think you could certainly make that argument. But you know, I just wanted to say, I got to give Sam Darnold his flowers. He played okay. He had his moments in this game. He's going to have his moments this year, folks. Like I've done the whole Sam Darnold oligarch thing on Football 301 and a bunch of shows like that. I'm not stupid. Like Sam Darnold's going to have his moments. He's also going to throw picks. He's going to do some silly stuff here, but I thought this was instructive that Darnold played well, that Aaron Jones played well. And on the other side, Andy, I mean, about as bad as it gets for old Daniel Jones. And you know, the class, and I say this lovingly to you guys, you Malik Nabers drafters, I've done this before. Okay. I've done the cope thing of, yeah, the quarterback play's not going to be good, but at least he's going to get all the targets. And you come out of week one and Malik Nabers has five catches for 66 yards on seven targets, and Wandale Robinson has 12 targets. Like, again, some weird stuff can happen when you got bad quarterbacks out there.
Yeah, vulnerable secondary too, right? But this is, you know, the again, I've come back to the fact that Daniel Jones has never produced an 800-yard receiver over the course of his NFL career. It's just really, really tough sledding with him. It was a nightmare game for him in a pretty friendly matchup. And, like, it's a joke, but it's not. Like, we got to be talking about Drew Lock pretty soon. I mean, how much worse would Drew Lock be than what we saw today?
Yeah, and, like, when/if Daniel Jones was to get hurt, then they get banged with the salary guarantees and the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a brutal 48 hours for the Giants, because we're not going to talk about the Thursday and Friday games here, but Saquon Barkley scored three touchdowns as a member of the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Giants scored zero touchdowns as an entire team today. So that's how the last 48 hours have gone. When there are multiple memes across the timeline of your team owner, you're having a bad weekend. And that is what happened with John Mara on Friday. 48 hours, by the way. I don't even know what freaking day it is. Obviously, Friday was longer than 48 hours ago. That's the type of spot I'm in. That's the type of spot Daniel Jones is in. But yeah, otherwise for the Vikings, we'll see how long the Sam Darnold thing can stay on the tracks, because that's a very beatable secondary, if not opposing front four, but a beatable secondary that the New York Giants bring to the table. Jordan Addison dealing with an ankle injury. We'll keep an eye on his status going forward. Let's move to the next game that we sort of care about here, Andy. Seahawks 26, Broncos 20. Bo Nix was Bo Nix. Super short stuff. Not a lot to say there. But I did think that the Seahawks offense looked competent, looked even intimidating at times. And unfortunately, the real story of the game was Ken Walker, 20 carries, over 100 yards and a touchdown. He also chipped in a couple of catches as well. Zach Charbonnet also scored as a receiver, but I thought he looked great in this game. Unfortunately, he was dealing with an ab injury in this one as well.
Yeah, he looked fantastic. I think he had a touchdown taken off the board, negated by penalty, right? Like, he looked great. And he looked great in maybe a slightly different way than he's always looked great. Like, I always think of Kenneth Walker as like a just sort of a big game hunting, you know, play for the home run kind of guy. But I thought really decisive, really tough. It was a great game. So obviously you hope that he's okay coming out of it. Charbonnet showed a little bit toward the end. I thought Geno had a better game than the stats actually suggest. I thought he was fine. It was great. Was your guy, Tyler Lockett. Huge, like, basically game clinching catch late in this one. I thought he was excellent after an offseason in which we were like, oh man, is he even going to play in week one? This guy's always hurt. JSN is coming for his job. Well, Tyler Lockett's a great player.
Great player. And that's things. I think he can still be a great player, and these other receivers can still be good too. JSN did play in 12 personnel ahead of Tyler Lockett today, so that is worth noting. And I feel like to keep Tyler Lockett healthy, that's probably the best course over the long term. But yeah, this is the first year I'm not going to have drafted Tyler Lockett. So of course he's going to come out here and lead his team in receiving in week one. But yeah, he's still a very good player. Like, he's not what I pushed back on all offseason was that he was washed. Like, no, you can still be a very good player for this team. And, you know, because of that, I do think like Metcalf's ceiling is going to be lower and JSN's not going to go to the moon. But I'm with you. The fact that Geno, I think, played really well in this game is encouraging moving forward. Do you have anything to say about the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix and his 3.3 yards per attempt?
Yeah, 3.3 YPA is really something.
7 yards per rush, though. So,
yeah,
you know, those numbers, like, are supposed to be the inverse when you're a quarterback. Oh, you're supposed to average 7 yards per pass, and maybe if you're a cute little scrambler, you know, 3.3 yards per attempt. But you know, I digress.
He threw, like, the second pick that he threw was just really brutal. Like, it just had no chance into three defenders. So that was really rough. But obviously most of his day was not a bunch of downfield attempts. You saw the rushing upside a little bit. I mean, he's really only a guy that we're going to be talking about in Superflex, up and down day, but way more down than up.
Let's move to the next game here. We've got Raiders 10, Chargers 22. I think the story of this game is J.K. Dobbins on the LA Chargers side. You know, I don't know about you, Andy, but I approached the Chargers skill position guys as kind of like it's a wide open battle. They're going to go to camp and whoever's the best receivers are going to play. Whoever's the best running backs over the course of the season, they're going to play more. Well, today, clearly, the best running back was J.K. Dobbins, who was buoyed by big, you know, plays, and he was caught from behind on his long touch or his long run. But I mean, still to come out here for 10 carries, 135 yards and a touchdown. He also chipped in 3 targets, 3 catches. You know, I thought that was super encouraging for a guy who's dealt with a lot in his NFL career.
Really, really great to see. And the touchdown run, the 12-yard touchdown run, just like a sort of masterclass in like just balance and vision. I mean, he ran through 3 or 4 guys. I'm not sure how he stayed on his feet. That was a great run. He had a couple of breakaways in this one. There was one where he did get caught from behind. He started to kind of do the old like DeMarco Murray thing where he starts looking around waiting to see who's going to tackle me.
Oh, I hate that comp, but yes, I know it. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So that wasn't great to see, but I mean, in terms of, you know, making people miss and running through contact, I thought he was terrific. And they've been screaming at us that it was going to be a hot hand situation. And listen, I think Gus Edwards is still going to have days. Like, I don't think you can go dropping Gus Edwards. There are going to be 2 touchdown games coming from Gus Edwards because we know this is a deeply run committed team. And I fully believe them when they say that they're going to roll with the hot hand. That hand clearly belonged to J.K. Dobbins today. I'm for selfish reasons, I'm glad that he popped because, you know, I wrote about him in the pickups column that we write before opening week. And I was like, oh, man, they made J.K. Dobbins the top image. I'm not really sure I wanted Dobbins as like the main headliner in this thing. We'll see how it goes. But he was great. He was absolutely great. You couldn't have expected better from him at this stage after all the stuff that he's overcome. So that was really, really good to see.
Yeah, Dobbins rostered in 48% of Yahoo leagues. Gus Edwards, 80%. I bet those two numbers are going to go a little bit different ways here after this week. But I'm with you. I would try to hold on to Gus Edwards just – we know the deal with J.K. Dobbins, injuries, the whole deal. Mm-hmm. A couple other notes here on 2 rookies. One, Joe Alt was awesome in this game. He allowed 0 quarterback pressures across 11 matchups against Max Crosby, all in one-on-one situations, according to Next Gen Stats. Crosby had not been held to 0 pressures in a matchup against an offensive lineman since week 9, 2022. So that is pretty epic. He did Joe Alt 3 pressures across his 28 pass blocking snaps total. So great showing by Joe Alt, the guy that they took 5th overall, and the guy they took in the 2nd round, Ladd McConkey, led the team in targets, 5 catches, and just one of the sickest touchdowns that you'll see where he took both the Raiders safeties to the woodshed. Yeah. So he's somebody I would want on my fantasy rosters.
Yeah, put 2 guys on skates on one play. That was really, really fun.
On the Raiders side, about what we expected. You know, Brock Bowers gets a lot of targets. Okay, fine. Devontae Adams, 5 for 59. What an escape. The backfield certainly was, we were led to believe it was going to just be the Zamir White show. 13 carries, a fumble, and Alexander Mattison scored a receiving touchdown.
Yeah, and I think Mattison actually out-snapped him, which is a little bit concerning. I mean, the box score looks fine, right? It was 13 carries for Zamir White. He started rough. I think his first 3 carries went for negative yardage, and the next series belonged to Mattison, and it gets punctuated with a really well-designed play. Like, the play was great, and Minshew sold it well, and Mattison got out in space, you know, leapt over a dude, and then waltzed into the end zone. But Mattison is clearly going to be part of this. He is clearly going to play, and he's the guy that they clearly they trust him perhaps more than Zamir White as a receiver. A little bit worried about the Zamir White shares, but that's, you know, that's a problem that, I mean, you have to see it coming. Like, the Raiders scored 10 points. That was always going to be the problem with this offense, right? You're investing in a backfield in a Gardner Minshew led attack.
Yeah. I think I only have 1 Zamir White team, and it was because the room basically forced me to draft him because it's just, this is the top guy in my rankings, and you know, he's way the top guy in my rankings. So I'm not expecting too much there. And yeah, this is certainly, he'll have better days, but this is this is probably like a more competitive game where you'd like to have seen him get close to 20 carries, and that did not happen. Not very encouraging there. Final game that we sort of care about, Andy Behrens. Commanders 20, Bucks 37. We'll put the Commanders aside for a second and just say, whoa, boy, Baker Mayfield, 4 touchdowns, 146.4 passer rating. Andy, I told you, I'm sure you know this feeling as somebody that's done this for 50 years now in this business. I told my neighbor, my next door neighbor, to start Baker Mayfield over Dak Prescott after I assured him that if he drafted off my cheat sheet, that he would get better than 10th place in his fantasy league for the first time since they've done it. I assured him I liked our odds. And so his first then decision point for me was, should I play Dak Prescott or should I play Baker Mayfield? And I know he's got this weird affinity for Baker. So it's like, oh, play your guy Baker. Cause then if it didn't work out, I'd be like, well, I kind of wanted you to do that cause he's your guy, but also it's a good matchup. Thank God it worked out. I don't have to move.
Wow. Was it a good matchup? Bold call by you. That's, you know, I don't think I would have been able to pull the trigger on that. I think I would default to Dak, but, a great game by Baker, incredible game by Mike Evans. Some phenomenal work there. Good to see the usage for Godwin. I mean, Baker was nearly perfect, right? Like that is a hell of a line. 4 touchdowns for him. I mean, you're not going to be starting him every week, but if I'm, you know, if I just lost Jordan Love and I don't have Jordan Love for the next maybe 3 weeks, Baker's probably the first widely available name that I'm looking at. Because again, he's the guy who gets to throw to Godwin and Evans, McMillan, White. Like this is it's a good team. It's a good environment. And he's coming off an absolutely brilliant day. It does say a lot about the Commanders' defense, though. Like they got whatever they wanted whenever they wanted it.
It definitely says a lot about the Commanders' defense. I just thought it was encouraging that this is an offensive, you know, transition, new coordinator, the whole thing. And Bucky Irving gave him a dimension on the ground. That's obviously a hot hand situation that we need to keep an eye on. You know, 2.1 yards per carry for Rashad White, 6.9 for Bucky Irving. I know that doesn't tell the whole story. Rashad White was awesome as a receiver, but just something to keep in mind that Irving could at least give him something as a rusher, which they need. I just thought that was encouraging. First game with Liam Cohen, and basically Baker comes out and pitches it almost perfect. The offensive line looked better. Jalen McMillan gets a touchdown in here. Chris Godwin usage was great. It's never going to be this perfect probably again for the Bucks all season, but I thought that was really encouraging. But like you said, says a lot about the Commanders defense. And for as much as the Commanders defense was problematic, I think the offense was almost worse. Like, yes, Jaden Daniels got you know, 88 carries, 2 touchdowns as a fantasy quarterback. Great. I have 0.0 faith that this offense is going to be an above average unit at any point this season. Terry McLaurin stuck on one side of the field. Never, no layups, nothing like that. And Jaden Daniels is then the rest of this depth chart is just, I mean, it's rough. So I don't really know what to say. I have nothing positive to say about the Commanders offense.
I thought Eckler looked kind of frisky. He took some shots. He took some huge shots in this one. Obviously, I thought Jaden Daniels looked fun as a fantasy weapon, and he's obviously a wonderful rushing threat. He can't, when he gives himself up, he can't somersault. Like that's wild.
I think his helmet came off twice in this game.
Like that's gotta change. I would be a little bit, you know, if I, again, anywhere that I have him in fantasy, I feel fine about it. Great rushing threat. No serious negative plays as a passer today, but man, he can't. I don't know how you make it through a full season playing, just being that willing to sacrifice your body. I don't know how you make it through a full year.
Yeah, like I said, I just didn't. You could preseason. They didn't show much. They're not tipping their hand. Looked like a Cliff Kingsbury offense in the preseason. Like a Cliff Kingsbury offense in week one. Don't feel that great about that. So, Terry McLaurin's the guy who's going to drop down my rankings a little bit for sure after this one. But let's take one final break. When we come back, talk about the games that probably could have been an email. And I also am learning in this new format that I need to be stricter about which games could have been an email, because there are a few of those that we talked through. At least one for sure, that Vikings Giants one, that probably could have been an email. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. All right, Andy, these games could have been an email. Cowboys 33, Browns 17. Write me the email about this game.
Not a particularly competitive game. Deshaun Watson was terrible. it was terrible in many of the same ways that he's been terrible each of the last couple of years. I don't know how it gets better for Cleveland.
Spoiler alert, it doesn't get better for Cleveland. I realize tough defense. They didn't have both their starting tackles, but the way they talked about Deshaun Watson in this game, for like, this was Tom Brady's first game announcing. It was rough. It was very indicative of the entire experience of just of watching this game. It was bad. I don't really know what else to say. Like, you could feel free to make as many excuses as you want. You've been doing it now for over 2 years in Cleveland. Continue away. Yeah. They put up the graphic of all other quarterbacks with Kevin Stefanski and Deshaun Watson, and I just don't even know like what to say in response to that at this point. So I have, if you got anything out of Browns players in this one, you came away pretty lucky. On the Cowboys side, the only thing we're writing in the email here is Zeke looked all right, and Jake Ferguson is getting an MRI on his knee. He wasn't on crutches, but that looked like a pretty scary knee injury there.
Yeah, didn't look great, and it basically happened when he planted. That's not anything you like to see. So you worry for Ferguson. Zeke looked good. Brandon Cooks found the end zone again. That guy, he didn't have like huge games in the second half last season, but he actually, if you look at the back half of his season, he was a wide receiver too for fantasy, and he scored almost every week, and he did it again.
Next game up, that could have been an email. Patriots 16. Bengals 10. I'll start our email on this one, Andy. Dear September Bengals, get your together. I am, to whom it may concern, everybody. Yeah. We are very concerned about September Cincinnati Bengals. It is pathetic now at this point that this team finds a way to start slow somehow every year. Typically, Andy, we blame it on, Joe Burrow's health, the offensive line. This year, I guess the excuse is, well, there's no T. Higgins, and Jamar Chase is coming off a contract holdout / food poisoning. Chase said in this game, it wasn't his fault that he didn't get the ball. He said, you can ask the coaching staff. He was on the field for 85% of the plays. And again, the first thing he said, why didn't you get the ball more out? You can ask the coaching staff. Tell me what that means. Maybe the other NFL players or the other receivers are just not NFL quality. But Burrow, per Next Gen Stats, was only pressured on 6 of 35 dropbacks. So it wasn't the typical, wow, they can't protect Joe Burrow. I mean, it's just look, I think the Patriots are going to be better than like the laughable exercise that some people think they're going to be. But you can't come out here and lose to they had complete control. The Patriots had complete control of this game the entire way through. That's rough for Cincinnati. Signed, Matt.
They also had complete control in a game in which they only scored 16 points, right? But it didn't feel particularly close, and Cincinnati didn't feel threatening, and they freaking had Jamar Chase. And to your point, like he played nearly the whole damn game and was not much of a factor. Kind of a shocking result, really. And I'm sure it took a zillion people out in Survivor. It should have. It was an improbable result, but man, you're just so right. They can't keep beginning seasons this way. It was brutal.
Yeah, me. If you can't tell by how upset I am, me. I'm one of the people that went down in Survivor.
Shout out to Ramondre. Ramondre was really good. Ramondre had, I don't know, at least half the touches for the Patriots. He was excellent.
25 rushes, 3 catches on 3 targets. Yeah, even if I lost in Survivor, I'm a sneaky winner here, because as I said on the podcast last week to Nate Tyson, we talked about the Patriots running game. Again, Nate Tyson, Fantasy Film Room, is absolutely dominating right now. 25 carries, 120 yards, and touchdown. I drafted a suspicious amount of Ramondre Stevenson, and he was another guy that just nobody seemed to want to touch. So fingers crossed that keeps up for the rest of the year. You know what else is going to keep up, Andy? The absolute misery of the Carolina Panthers. Our final game that could have been an email. Panthers 10, Saints 47. Here's my email on this one. Dear Matt Harmon, comma, I know you were higher on the Saints offense than maybe any other, I'm gonna say rational person on planet Earth. Because I'm not sure if you're a rational person, but most normal human beings with an operating brain, you were higher than the Saints offense. Weirdly, take nothing from this. This is just the Panthers. Here's a more interesting prompt. Self, is it more Jover for the Browns, or is it more Jover for the Bengals? The Panthers. I don't even want to call them by their real name. They're not even a real cat. Give me a break. The Panthers. What a disgusting week one performance from the Carolina Panthers, Andy Behrens.
Yeah, I think the most productive thing we can do here is actually just look at the upcoming opponents for the Carolina Panthers, because there are going to be plenty of opportunities to pick on that defense. It's the Chargers, the Raiders, the Bengals. There's a get right spot for the Bengals. The Bears get the Panthers pretty soon. Atlanta gets them. Washington gets them. I mean, that just had the vibe of a team that was not ready for week one, maybe not ready to play at the NFL level. That was, it was rough. It was rough offensively. The defense was non-existent. Rashid Shaheed immediately with a 70-yard score, right? Like, it was just, they were just clowning him. It wasn't competitive in any way.
I think I've seen Rashid Shaheed score that touchdown 10 times in his career. Yes. Don't even quote me on how many career touchdowns he has, but it's like we've never seen this team play before. It is pretty rough that the Saints score 47 points. Derek Carr throws for 3 touchdowns and Chris Olave comes away with 2 catches for 11 yards. But sometimes that's going to happen when you're blowing out an XFL team on the other side. Yeah, it's rough for Bryce Young. I don't really know what else to say. Saints are a good defense. I did say that on FFL this morning. This is annually, for whatever else is wrong with them, they're annually a very good defense, but still about as bad as it could possibly be for a start with the Carolina Panthers. Final order of business, Andy. Any awards you want to hand out this week? We can hand out a few of them. Vulture of the Week, Unsung Hero of the Week, or the WTF Moment of the Week. I'll cede the floor to you if you have a if you have an award you want to hand out here.
How about, okay, I'll give a WTF of the Week. How about Brandon Aubrey kicking a damn 66-yard field goal, but it gets negated by a delay of game penalty. And then they thought about allowing him to kick a 71-yard field goal. And why not? It's the freaking end of the half. It's a non-competitive game against the Browns. Do the thing that the Raiders used to do with Sebastian Janikowski and just let him try to kick an 80-yard field goal, because it makes him happy. It makes the fans happy. And in Aubrey's case, he might have done it. He had just comfortably hit a 66-yarder that didn't count. I can't believe they didn't let him attempt it.
How many fantasy teams do you have Brandon Aubrey on?
Several teams. I don't even know what a 71-yard field goal looks like in the fantasy box score. That would have been incredible. I'm sick about it.
You know, it's funny, actually. I think that team that I talked about that has Zamir White, who I didn't start in this, you know, and I'm getting smashed anyway, so who cares? But I did. That is my one Brandon Aubrey team. So 22 points from old Brandon Aubrey. He could have saved my ass in this one. Probably not.
71 yards. That's what they were staring at, with no real downside. Your downside is he comes up short, which was never going to happen because it's Brandon Aubrey and they get a chance to return it. Wasn't going to happen. He had drilled a 66-yarder, Matt. That is, I'm sick about it. I'll be thinking about it all week.
Well, you know what? I think that's a perfect note to end this podcast on. Is Andy Behrens is sick. He's sick about this Brandon Aubrey catastrophe. Appreciate you, Andy. Thanks so much. You will obviously talk to you later in the week for the week 2 preview, because this thing is rolling along. But before we get to week 2, people, we know that you are panicked, okay? All right? There's a lot of stuff to freak out about. A lot of stuff to be freaking out about. Your Dalton Kincaids, your Marvin Harrisons, your Drake Londons. We're going to talk about it all tomorrow on Tuesday with Dalton Del Don, who joins me for the regular season debut of the People's Panic Meter. fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com is where you want to send in your video or voice memos. Your written emails are good too, especially if they're funny. I will read the entire thing out. I also will tweet the thread out if you want to just respond there. Can't wait to get into all that. Can't believe that panicking is back in our life. Football is back in our lives. What a time to be alive. Until tomorrow, we are out.